Before we start with today's episode, please consider donating to one of the many, 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 many organizations and individuals who are working on grounds currently in Beirut in Lebanon, where, as you may know, 2 weeks ago, there was a huge explosion caused by mismanagement of the government. And many, many, many citizens are trying to rebuild because the government has proven to be incompetent. So please, please, please consider donating whatever you can to the Lebanese Red Cross. There's a Lebanese food bank. There's Hammam Radio, and so many more that you can find online. I will try to link some on our Instagram page. Yes, that's all I wanted to say. Let's get into the episode. Welcome, guys. Welcome to another episode of Tan and Tanner. Thank you again so much for joining us this week. I have a very special guest back at it again. we waited this entire time that you were here to record this episode.
I didn't know until 2 days ago that I was going to record an episode, but okay. We waited this entire time.
I waited. Maura's back, and she's been staying with us for the past month, I think,
right? It's been a month, yes. 2 days ago, so...
Yes. Yeah. Yeehaw. We are safe, though. Like, we've been safe, despite COVID, trying to...
Taken precautions.
Precautions, exactly. But that's not what we're talking about this
week. I sure hope we don't.
Oh no, I'm so tired of hearing about it. Anyway, and I got in a fight last week, this week, about it, so...
Yeah, you're just constantly angry about it, so I'm not sure when it was.
Yeah,
time is an illusion.
Time is an illusion indeed. But we wanted to talk about women.
Women.
Specifically about the new movie adaptation of Little Women by Greta Gerwig, which came out last year in the US, I think, right?
Yes, 2019.
Yeah. Oh, I missed 2019. Anyway.
Christmas 2019.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Because I wanted to talk about this movie for a very long time because I really, 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 really enjoyed it when we watched it in the cinema. Yeah. It was so good. It made me cry a lot. and then I recently rewatched it with my roommate, and made me cry just as much. And I kept scribbling down notes because I was like, this movie is so good. Like, I need to take notes. And, because I am observant, but I am not very good at retaining information about the observations I make. So, but I didn't want to do it alone, and
I'm here, so I am the victim.
Yeah, I'm the victim.
No, I am a big fan. I actually watched it 3 times in the span of 1 week when it came out in Germany, because I watched it alone, and because I thought my friends were going to watch it with other people, and then I had watched it once, cried. My friend was like, I have not seen it yet. Do you want to watch it with me? I was like, sure. And then my mom was like, do you want to watch Little Women? Because I was visiting her at the time. And I didn't tell her I had already watched it. So I was like, yeah, sure. And so I watched it 3 times in 1 week. After the 3rd time, I still really liked the movie. So yeah, I'm a fan.
Was the 2nd time when we watched it together? Yes. Okay.
So I had already seen it.
Yeah.
I was... The 2nd time around, I was a bit scared that it wouldn't live up to my... I don't know, like, the expectations from the first time, because the first time around, I was really emotional. And sometimes you get emotional watching something, or at least for me, sometimes you get emotional watching something and then you rewatch it and you just realize that you just had a lot of emotions that day and the movie wasn't that great. But I, like, watching it a second time, I just honed in on the emotions even more. And the 3rd time, I was actually able to appreciate the movie outside of the connection I made.
Yeah.
Like, the emotional connection I had in the first 2 views. So, yeah, I really enjoyed it. But also, I'm just rambling here, sorry. But I made a list of all the movies I watched that came out in 2019. And I had a very hard time putting Little Women, like ranking it in there. Because I really wasn't sure if I liked the movie because it, I had like a connection to it, like I could relate to it a lot, or because it's a really good movie. And I knew that it was one of my favorite movies from that year, but I didn't know if it was better than others. So I think I moved it around a lot before I found like its spot. But it's still my top 10 from last year. So
I mean, I think part of art and especially cinema is what kind of emotions it evokes in you anyway. So I think if it did make you feel something, I think it's good. Like I definitely mean, that's personal.
Yeah, I think
against interpretation.
Yeah, we are big fans of Susan Sontag's Against Interpretation in this household. But I try to find a balance between it you know, means something to me emotionally on a personal level, and it actually being
well made
exactly, because there's a lot of movies that are just not well made, but I still really really love them.
What, like what, for example?
Oh, don't put me on the spot like that, because some of the arguably you know, I will fight for this, because a lot of people say that Batman and Robin is a bad movie, but I think it's a masterpiece. Yeah. But, you know, some people say it's a bad movie, but...
I mean, I only have seen... Yeah, I have seen reels of... Real? Is that what it's called? Like, I have seen scenes of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's a comedic masterpiece, but...
I think, we're not talking about Batman and Robin here, sorry. But... I think they just, the expectations for the movie were different from the artistic,
interpretation.
The artistic focus from a director's standpoint.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We could go on and maybe we will make an episode.
One day we'll make a guilty pleasure, quote-unquote episode.
I always remember Pink saying, I don't have any guilty pleasures. When people say, like, oh, what is your guilty pleasure? And I was like, Pink said, no guilty pleasures in this household.
I have a guilty pleasure. Criminal Minds.
I mean, mine is Riverdale. It's a bad show, but I still
If you watch it pretending that it's a satire.
It's satire. Yeah, that's I'm only in there to, you know, see the teenage drama unfold because it's just so funny. Like, it's just so ridiculously funny. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this is not what we're here for. We wanted to talk about Little Women. And I mean, if you haven't seen the movie by now, maybe, I mean, there's going to be spoilers in this.
There's definitely going to be spoilers. We're just going to take it apart.
Yeah. Oh, also a disclaimer. I have not watched any of the other adaptations.
Me neither. I have seen scenes from the,
I know that
the
Fiona,
90s version.
What was her name?
Wynonna Ryder.
Wynonna Ryder. Fiona.
And Christian Bale. Same thing. I've seen scenes from that, but it was when I was younger, so I cannot really remember. Mm.
But
there's like more than 5 versions of Little Women. So.
Yeah, but so we're not gonna compare in this episode because we can't. But
also nothing compares. Nothing compares to Little Women. Directed by Greta Gerwig.
2019. But maybe we should, like, because you, last time you watched it is like 6 months ago.
More than, I watched it in January or first week of February.
So, so it was like seven months. Yeah. Well, it's the beginning of August, so.
Yeah.
I can't math. So, anyway. We should, I last time I watched it was actually in during quarantine, so I think it's like 4 or 3 months ago, so we should
what happened,
recall. What happened. I will give you have better storytelling abilities, so I
do
will.
Not yes, you do. The story is set in like around 1860 something.
I do not know the time,
because
I just remember the Ugg boots.
The American Civil War is in 1860-something. So it starts somewhere around there because the Civil War is happening.
Yeah, because the dad is gone, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So it the movie is based around four sisters, their family dynamic, and their neighbor.
And their neighbor.
And their neighbor. Their friendly neighborhood, Timothée Chalamet. And I mean, they're upper middle class-ish, right?
I don't think so, because I think, I mean, they're not lower class. I think they're like middle class, but like not upper.
I think they're only poor because they keep giving away things. They're not upper class.
No, they're not upper.
That's why I'm like, they're upper middle.
No, no, but I mean, I think they're lower middle class. Because they, you know how Aunt March is, is that her name?
March.
Is that her name?
Yeah.
I think that was her name,
yeah,
right?
That's her name.
She keeps being like, yeah, like, I think they were upper, and then they gave away a lot of their things, and now they're like more like working class, I think.
Okay.
I mean, they have a servant though, so I'm not sure.
That's why I'm like,
Anyway, so like, let's say middle class.
Okay.
Family.
Yeah, and it's kind of about their life and how they grow up and how their dynamics change and the conflicts that they have. But also, since it's centered around four young women, it shows the private life of women in that time.
Yeah,
and the conflicts and restrictions that womanhood and
entails.
That was like English language. How does it work?
I mean, so basically, like, I would say, I mean, they're all protagonists in a way, but for me, the like, story, the main is driven by Joe.
Exactly. Joe March. I actually, what did I write down? I was like, Joe is the center, but the characters don't
they also exist outside of Joe.
They don't revolve. The story doesn't revolve around her. It revolves about all four of them.
Yeah.
But she's the center because she's the writer.
Yeah, exactly.
And she eventually writes the book Little Women.
Yeah.
Within Little Women.
Yeah. Which is like basically is inspired by her life with her sisters. So that's why she is like the storyline kind of follows her.
Yeah.
Mostly, but it's. Yeah, they're all protagonists. And you have Joe, the writer. You have Amy. Oh, no, Meg is the oldest, I think, right?
Yeah, Meg is the oldest.
Meg is
then
the oldest.
Joe.
She's good at acting, apparently.
Yeah, she has a passion for it.
She has a passion for it. Joe is the second child. She's the writer. Then there is Amy, who is the painter. And Beth, who is the youngest, and she plays the piano.
Yeah.
Really nicely. And it starts off with... the story starts with Joe trying to sell one of her stories, I think, to a to a publisher, right? And then from there, like, the story kind of picks up, and there is like it starts in the present, but there's a lot of like
flashbacks
to the childhood, and that's how you connect the character. Like, this is how we get to know the characters and their history and their relationships. And yeah, this was a very bad of the plot, but
I mean, if you haven't watched it yet, like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, go watch it right now and then come back. So for me, okay, so there's a few reasons why I'm so obsessed with this movie, and I mean, they all belong together, but when we were planning this episode, I told you, like, there's like three parts that I basically really, that stand out for me. And this is why I think personally the movie is it's a good movie, not only because it is emotional for me and you, but also because it's just well made. And like, that's like the technical aspects, the characters themselves and the way that they were written. And then also the theme of, as you said, being a woman, all the things that come with that social status back in those times, but also for me now, like, it's still relevant. It's still a relevant point of view, in my opinion.
I think what makes this movie stand out to me compared to other movies that are set in that era and that center around women, is that especially I think this year or earlier, like at the end of last year, there was the remake of Emma, the Jane Austen novel, and
this year.
Emma is set I think in like the beginning of the 19th century, so it's the same century. And it also deals with women, but in a lot of adaptations of, you know, books that are written at the time, I feel like they try to make it as authentic to the era as possible. So the dialogue is very
stiff.
Exactly. And the way the story is told as well. And I feel like Little Women, they took a lot of liberties in the way they showed the time era. To make it closer to the now. To make you be able to relate to their struggles, because they are not portrayed in the, you know, the classical
way.
For that era.
I agree. I think, where do you want to start? Because there is a lot we need to talk about here. And, like, personally, I don't know what's best, to start with the characters, or...
I would start with the characters. I don't know, I just wanna... the my favorite part about the movie is the character dynamics.
Yeah. I mean, they're very well made, so... And, you know, like, having a sister, I was just like...
We both have sisters.
Wow, yeah, like, this is very difficult. And you are the youngest, and I'm the oldest, so that's perfect. Like, we have, like, best of, I mean, we don't have a middle child here, but
it's
fine.
Who needs middle?
This is why they all have issues. They keep getting left out. Anyway, I think we have very different perspectives.
Definitely.
On Joe,
on Joe
especially.
And Amy and all of them.
All of them. Yeah.
All of them.
I mean, no, I feel like we agree on Meg.
I mean, we can't. We agree on everything, but we
in
also disagree.
Ways,
because
why
you...
Why do we always tease our opinions like this?
Because you said that you can relate to Meg in the sense that you used to have that I don't know, aspiration or perspective on the future that Meg has, that she sees herself as a wife and a mother, and that's something that she wants in her life. And I cannot.
No, I mean,
absolutely not. Relate to it at all.
Not the relation to us, but I mean, generally, like, the how the characters are. I think on Meg and Beth, we do agree. And Marmee. But I think the how we see Joe and Amy is different.
We will see.
We will see.
Yeah,
maybe there are still surprises in here that we haven't unpacked yet. But do we want to start with Joe? I guess
I would start with Joe and Amy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just put them together because when we were preparing this, we both agreed that Amy and Joe are kind of two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. When you said that, I was like, this is a really good analogy?
I don't speak English. I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a good metaphor. Yeah, because when I was watching the movie for a second time, like, the first time I didn't notice it, but the second time I was like, they're the same. As an artist, like, there are certain aspects that are different, but overall, they're both the sisters that stand out to me the most. Not because like, they're the loudest or whatever. They stand out to me because they actually want to pursue their artistic side. While the other two sisters are more... like, Beth is very humble, for example. Like, she plays the piano very well, but she never sees herself, like...
Like
in an orchestra. Or, like, she doesn't see it as a... I don't know if she... Not that it's not worthwhile, but I think it's more for her. Like, she does it for herself. And while Joe and Amy, they also do it for themselves, but they want recognition. Like, they want to be seen out in the world as artists. And we will come back to that theme later.
Definitely.
Like, women as artists. In the they're very similar, but they... I think for me, and I said this before, and you disagreed on this, like... for me, okay, now let's start where we agreed. So we do agree that Amy is more goal-oriented, right?
Yeah, they're both driven.
Yeah.
But Amy is more goal-oriented, as in she literally says, I want to be great or nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Jo doesn't really think about being great.
Yeah.
She just wants to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, that I think is different for them both. That Amy is more driven, more goal-oriented.
I think also, I mean, for me, where it showed was basically, like, you know, nobody likes On Marcha, and this, they deal with her, but like, they're not very fond of her that much. And you know, Jo doesn't really follow through with, she doesn't keep herself like, there's no self-discipline for her in that sense, because, you know, they're On Marcha's in a means to an end, basically, but she doesn't follow through with it, and so she loses the favor of On Marcha, which is still shitty. Like, you should, you know, you shouldn't exploit children like this, but okay. But Amy, she starts it and she follows through, and that's what I mean with when she, like, she's focused on, even though she hates doing that, like, you know, not necessarily hates, but, like, you know, she, it's not the favorite thing that she's doing, you know, but she's doing it because she knows that it's gonna get her where she wants to be, and that's kind of where I see a big difference between the two. Yeah, and I mean, but both of them are also very short-tempered. I think that's so funny, like, the scene where she burned, like, when Jo and Meg go to the theater, and Amy's like, you're gonna regret this, Jo March. And I was like, wow, this is me when I was a child. Like, this is still me, but less intense. Mm. But, oh, that was, that outburst, I was like, yeehaw.
Can't relate.
And it also, like, it's not only, I mean, I wouldn't burn my sister's book, but I just like the way that she gets upset. I see that also in Jo a lot. Like, when Jo has a more silent anger, like in that scene where, you know, she goes out with Lori to skate, and then she just, like, you know,
where she ignores Amy, she just ignores her with the breakfast cold shoulder. Table.
Yeah. Or when she, but she also has moments where she gets, loud as well, like with Frederick in the beginning, when he gives her feedback, she's like, and for Frederick also, that scene really shows me that another difference between Jo and Amy for me is that I feel like Jo is more insecure about her writing, at least in the beginning, because she's focused on pleasing an audience, right? I mean, she is not writing authentically because she wants to sell the pieces to someone.
You mean in the beginning of the film?
Yeah, in the film.
Because she's not self-conscious as a child. She just writes her plays for her sister. No. So there she is completely authentic and thriving. And then she goes out into the world and realizes what sells and what doesn't sell. And I think for me, that also, like, in her development, I think that's when she starts realizing her place in the world, kind of.
Yeah.
That, you know, the stories that she writes beforehand, they're not for the broad audience, or they're not accepted.
Not yet.
Not yet. Also because, I don't know. I lost track of what I was gonna say. I was like, I have a point here, but I forgot.
Just stop me when I talk too much. Okay. No, that's what I mean. Like, in the beginning of the film, I feel like she's very insecure about, because she knows it's not authentic, you know. Yeah. So she bursts when Frederick criticizes it. And I'm not saying the critique was well.
The critique was so shitty. I'm like, I was so mad the first time I watched it. I was like, I get that it's probably not good what she's writing.
Yeah.
However, he's not being constructive. He's just saying it's bad writing.
Yeah.
And I would also be angry. Like, he should have just, you know, said what's bad about it. Not just, you know, he literally, like, he had, like, the straightest face and was like, it's not good.
Yeah. That's true. That's fair. What else? So, yeah, I felt like, this is the point that we disagreed on, But maybe I'm just not using the right word, to be honest. Who knows? But in my opinion, I feel like a lot of people see Jo as the bravest sister, like, because she, you know, she went to New York, I think, yeah. right? To pursue her career and all of these things. But I personally felt like Jo was much, and like, she cuts her hair for, like, I think that was also a big scene where people were like, oh, like,
yeah, but honestly, so that's just her being impulsive.
Exactly. Yeah, no.
I love that scene because yeah! when she starts crying right. about her hair, that was so funny.
Yeah, and Amy's like, oh, like, it's okay. Like, I love their dynamic, by the way. I think they make each other, I mean, they drive each other insane,
yeah.
but they also make each other better.
And they're the most realistic sisters to
me. Honestly, yes, they are. That's so funny. Like, but I, like, for me, I feel like Amy is much braver in the sense that she, is like putting, like, I don't know, I forgot my point, but anyway, I felt like she was more, she was braver because she, maybe it was because she was, I forgot my point.
I think what you mean with braver is that she is more open with, her emotions, that she is more conscious oh, yeah. of her emotions.
Thank you. Yes.
She calls out Laurie for
his choosing behavior.
For his behavior and choosing yeah. her because he can't have Jo
yeah.
these things that she's not afraid to tell people off.
Yeah, I think.
Whereas Jo just, she's not good with emotions.
Yeah.
She doesn't understand herself that well. But it's also, that is also so, shown in scenes, like the scene with her mother, when she's like, I have this anger and I don't know how to control it, and sometimes I just lash out and I don't know why. That she's just not, she knows that she has issues, but she doesn't know where they come from yeah. or how to handle them.
Yeah.
And how to apologize.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, thank you for picking up my point. Even though you were disagreeing with you.
Yeah, because I was just disagreeing with the bravery thing, because I don't think it's what you meant. But I didn't really know. I just, in the spur of the moment right now, I was like, oh, that's what she meant.
love that for us.
Our brain cell has been connected.
Indeed. it's very hard to concentrate because I keep having left and right, left and right in my brain. What I wanted to say is that, last thing I'm going to say is...
About Jo and Amy.
Is what I love about... of course it's intentional that they're both so close in character, right? Because they keep being, like, quote-unquote rivals throughout the movie. Yeah. Like, first with On March going to Europe... And then later with Laurie, and like in general, I mean,
and
also
the parallel of them both being artists. In their own craft.
Yeah, exactly. And being, but like, also, actually wanting to pursue it, you know. There is some rivalry, but I feel like because they're sisters, it's not necessarily. I don't think there is that much jealous. I mean, there is some jealousy, like when, you know, Jo and Meg go to the theater with Laurie and the teacher.
They don't want to have
tear
the
each
other
down. They do want them to pursue their dreams, and there is this. Amy burns.
Yeah,
Jo's
but she
story
does it because
anger, but...
it will hurt her, not like personally, not because she wants to hurt her art.
And I think that's so beautiful because I get that, of course, like any sibling can tell you that there is always gonna be some form of jealousy between each other, you know, like between each other and in the things that you do. And of course, you're always being compared by family members and blah 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 blah. But what I like about them being sisters and having this kind of rivalry, I feel like, again, what I was saying before, I feel like they push each other to be better in certain ways, like not explicitly, but you know, like through their relationship. And
I think it's also it's wrapped up really well by the scene when Laurie and Amy come back from Europe, and Amy is so, like, you can see in her face that she is so scared of what Joe is gonna say.
Yeah.
And then Joe says,
so happy for you. Something like that.
Yeah, she's like, there's what does she say? She says, life's too short to be angry at your sister.
Yeah, something like that.
Because and then you see like the relief on Amy's face because she probably thinks the same way, but she was so scared to lose her sister over a man.
Yep. which is, you know, like, to be honest, I think that's so, I'm so glad that they talked about, like, that they showed the fact that your relationship with the women in your life are more important than a boy, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, Greta Gerwig, she's onto something, you know? I mean, again, I don't know what the other adaptations look like, but, yeah. Yeah, I was like, thank you.
The way it's portrayed, I think it's...
it's pretty awesome. It's
pretty good.
Yeah, I like that.
Props to Florence Pugh for her face. Because the emotion she goes through in that scene, I'm like, ah.
She has the range.
Truly.
Yeah, love her. Did you want to add anything to Joe and Amy?
Later, or? Probably. Like, when we talk about themes.
Themes? Okay. I don't have that much to say about Meg.
I don't have a lot of to say about Meg either. Just that she is, this is
she's
also really kind
the
of
oldest
about,
sister.
Yeah, she's the older sister, and her.
It shows.
I mean, she doesn't really have the drive that, in that way you have kind of Joe and Amy, and you have Beth and Meg in the sense that you have those two characters that are very driven.
Mm.
And
very
then
passionate.
You have and then you have the other two who are you know they are very family oriented and since Meg kind of just wants to conform to society and have she wants to fit in and have the classical lifestyle of being a mother and being a wife
For me, that's a cautionary tale at this point. But yeah, I know it wasn't intended like that, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think, like, I didn't read the book, but I'm sure that you have Meg in there as well to show that there's different lives that you can have and that you can be happy as long as it's the life you choose.
Yeah. I think what I... Like, Meg is just such... Like, not only is she conventional, but I think she also wants that she is kind of... I mean, she's still very grounded, but I feel like she has this kind of fairy tale hope that, like, she marries well. Because she keeps being like, oh, I wish I had servants, or I wish I had... Like, you know.
She wants to be comfortable.
She wants to be comfortable, and that's her aspiration. Like, to be a mother, and to be a wife, and to be comfortable. That's basically... What she's looking forward to. But the reason why this is a cautionary tale for me is because there was this one scene where...
he guilt trips her?
I mean, yeah, that too. But, like, you know, at the end... I mean, she's happy at the end of it. But it didn't turn out the way that she imagined it, and like it's still fine because, you know, she has her family and whatnot, but I just got my point back, sorry. Okay. I forgot for a second. I was like, maybe it will come back to me. No, I think the reason why it's so fishy to me is because she's the oldest and it's expected of the oldest to marry well. That's the whole thing with Aunt March as well, like,
but
you know,
the thing is she doesn't marry well.
Yeah,
she marries
exactly.
For love.
Yeah.
And
that's
so
when it changes. But I feel like her that's why I feel like her aspirations shatter a bit later. Like reality hits her, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like because her aspirations is truly what is expected of her, and I think that's a bit like interesting. Mm. But then the consequences of what she wanted kind of hit her. And that's fine. Like again, she's not like she hates it. Completely, you know, but
I mean, she's content at the end.
At the end,
I mean, she's
there was hardship,
has hardships, but she says that it's fine because it's the man that she loves, and she wouldn't change it.
Yeah, and
but the man is fishy.
The man is fishy. Oh my god, when the scene when they come in the house and he's like, "There's a Garden too, you know, and they're all like, huh? I thought that was so funny. But yeah, I don't have anything else to say but her. Yeah. And I mean, Beth is just like, it broke me so much that she had to die in the movie, but I knew it was necessary for the plot. I mean, in my opinion, I think it was necessary, but I, like, she's the very, like, the humble, down-to-earth person. She's the most dutiful as well. Like, when the mother leaves, she continues to go to the poor neighbors and bring them stuff. And that's when she gets sick, right?
Yeah.
And I think...
For the first time.
For the... Was it the first time?
Yeah, the first time.
Oh, she gets
sick,
yeah.
And then...
True.
Later on, she gets sick again. When, because she recovers.
Yeah. True. Yeah, so, for me, I think that's... That part of her is mostly represented for me in Marmee as well. Like, you see... I feel like she's the closest in character to
Marmee. I actually wrote down the quote that Joe says, Beth was the best of us.
Yeah,
or I wrote something along too. Those lines. And I put no. Because Marmee is the best of them.
That's true, yeah.
Because Marmee has qualities of all of them, but she has learned how to...
Balances.
I don't know, she's zen.
Yeah.
You know, she there's the scene where she talks with Joe. I mean, there's more than one. And she, it's like she has everything figured out, or most of it. She knows how to deal with herself. She knows herself. But she also knows how to deal with the world. Mm.
That's true.
And I think you also see that in her... relationship with Laurie, because she instantly adopts him.
It's so funny.
I think that's kind of, you know, if Beth was more not outgoing but more what is the word,
extroverted,
no if you like proactive, there's a word, because, you know,
more
she...
More pursuing.
Yeah. She goes to that poor family to take care of them because Marmee initiated it.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, she doesn't take the first step yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's a bit reserved.
Yeah. There's one word and I cannot come up with it. And we're just, like, skirting around it. Like,
What is English even?
Yeah, and that's kind of the best qualities in Marmee that I see that are elevated.
Yeah.
And then you have, you know, Meg's idea of...
Motherhood and
being a wife and taking care of people being able to compromise, which is also like a good quality of Meg, because, you know, she's trying to save money, but then she gives money to her sisters.
Yeah.
So they can, I don't know what it was. Amy wanted some lemons or limes or something.
Pickled
in the beginning.
Limes, yeah.
Pickled limes, yeah. And she gives her the money, even though she really doesn't have any.
Yeah.
And then there's, I don't know, the passion of Joe and Amy.
Yeah.
Is also there, but she knows how to deal with it and
how to direct it into good causes.
Yeah,
that's why she goes helps. I think all the time, because she's very passionate about people.
Yeah.
I think that's how you
Marmee
see
is
that.
Kind of the one in the family. She isn't an artist.
No.
She's a humanitarian or something.
Yeah. Let's call it that.
And. Yeah.
Love that for her.
She's the best of them.
Yeah. No, I agree. But that's true. But it's, I think that's why they mostly see Beth's qualities in their mother, because they don't question, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why they say Beth was the best of them. I think that's kind of interlinked.
Yeah.
But I absolutely agree with you. And what other characters? Well, there is only Laurie left, I think, one of the
I wrote down
characters.
Laurie is just a token.
Yes, he is.
While he's a fleshed out character,
because Greta wouldn't do that to us.
he is only relevant to the story through Joe and Amy.
Yeah,
in my opinion. I mean, he also has a relationship to Meg and to Beth, and it's kind of shown, but the interactions are just there to show that they're close.
Yeah.
Whereas with Amy and Joe, you actually get deeper into it and you actually feel or are able to see their relationship evolve.
Yeah, that's true. I think the only, like, for me as well, like, Roy was only important in connection to the other characters. Mm. And I think it is mostly to show, like, I love the contrast between the houses, right? Like, I think the first time Laurie enters their home, right? And there's so much chaos and, like, people, and he's like, what is going on? Like, you can see that he's a bit confused, but he likes it.
Yeah, he's like, he feels out of place, but he's longing for it.
Yeah, and then there's the other scene where all of them are in his house, and you can see the contrast because the colors in the March house are very warm and, like, welcoming and all very, like, it's more like red-orange kind of thing. And his house is more, like, gray, blue, cold colors.
Male colors.
And, you know, they come into this house and suddenly they all bring, like, loud warmth noise and color and warmth.
And chaos.
I love it so much. That's one of my favorite scenes.
It's so great to choreographed as well.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to jump into the next aspect of the movie, which is, like, the way, like, the technicalities of it. Unless you have something else to say about the characters.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm probably going to get into it later with, like, the themes of women.
It's, what I like about those scenes, which is something that you pointed out and that I noticed, but I couldn't put my finger on it, is that in those scenes where it's very, like, chattery and, like, very chaotic, the camera follows the people that you are supposed to focus on, which makes it easier to follow the story, right? And,
Shots are still made in a way that you can see a lot of the chaos going on, but it's always clear who you're supposed to focus on.
Yeah.
And especially in the scene after the first, the dance they go to, when Laurie brings Meg, like, an injured Meg and Joe home, and he's in their house for the first time, and you have Joe casually undressing, and I mean, like, the outer layer of her dress, and Meg sitting down and her sister's fuzzing over her and her ankle and asking all these questions, and then
I would have never broken my hair.
That's later,
I know.
And Marmee coming in, she's like, do you want a cookie? Here, have a cookie. I just bake sometimes. And you're kind of seeing it from Laurie's perspective, and you learn about their family dynamic in that scene. I think it really shows the dynamic, but also the longing of Laurie to be part of a family that is actually
warm,
that actually exists, because he only has I think, like, his mother died early or something like that, and he grew up in Europe and lived with his grandpa and when doesn't Timothée speak French? It's like in every movie, he's like,
oui, oui.
Baguettes.
Yeah, I really like that. And I also really like the shot in his house, because it's basically like a continuous shot almost, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't watched it in a while, so I'm not sure if it's completely...
It's just, I'm not sure if it's just one shot, but it's very feels smooth. Like one. Yeah,
yeah. And I love that as well. It's the same there, like, you have... I think Laurie and Joe have a conversation at some point, and, like, it hones in on them, but you can still hear the other people. And then Marmee and Laurie's grandfather, they have a conversation at some point, and it's very I love it. Like, and generally the camera work, genuinely, I love it so much, because already the first, like, in the very beginning, you can tell that the camera work is going to be very dynamic, because you follow, like, when Joe runs out of the publishing house, the camera follows her. Yeah. Like, you can have different shots of people running, but that one was really, like, okay, we followed the protagonist. Yeah. And it's the same, like, there are very intimate shots as well. I think there's, like, one of, I think Frederick was reading a note or something, and it was like very, I felt like it was a very intimate. Oh yeah, I think he writes her a note.
He writes her a note and then, about the Shakespeare.
Yeah, and like the camera zooms in on his face, and like I
feel, and it's like he's standing there and reciting what he's saying.
Yeah.
It's a very moonlightish shot, like Barry Jenkins would do that, but Barry Jenkins makes a close up of his face and not like a,
yeah, a zoom
like
in.
Half portrait,
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, and I think that's what the camera does well is really put us in the story as like an observer, like a silent and invisible observer, and I love that about the movie. I think that's, yeah, like way to go with my emotions, you know, way to play with them.
Yeah, I mean also the shot. The scene of Laurie proposing the fact that they chose like an open field and they just run down the field and keep moving while having that conversation, whereas in like a classical adaptation I would think they would have them like sitting under a tree or on a, I don't know, on a bench, and having like a very you know, reserved kind of, like, still intimate, but, you know, keeping the class in there, whereas Joe is just, you know, being wild and yelling, and they're just extra dramatic, but in an authentic kind of way.
Yeah. I think I forgot to say this before, but...
Which is very modern, in my opinion. Like, that's one of the scenes where that, like, what I said in the beginning, that it's very much made... So you can relate to the situations because the way that they talk to each other is very modern.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to make the movie relevant though.
Because
I think that's my problem with a lot of like
period
classic
dramas,
I'm just like, how am I supposed to relate to this, you know? But I actually forgot to say this when we were talking about the characters, but that scene made it clear to me that, I mean, for me personally, that kind of was one of the moments where I was thinking like, oh, Joe really holds on to her, how her childhood was, like, childhood, I can't talk. Not because she wants to be a child, but because of the way that her childhood was going and the, you know, the relationship she had back then and the dynamics that were existing. Mm. And she's very afraid of what's gonna come next, I feel like.
This reminds me of, I don't know if I read it or if I don't think I came up with this myself, but how Lady Bird and Little Women kind of connect, whereas Lady Bird ends with Lady Bird coming of age, quote unquote, and realizing that she has lived in a bubble and her persona of being a high school or a teenager doesn't work in that way
in real life
or in the world outside of her home or her home space. And I feel like Little Women kind of picks off and it keeps asking the questions, who am I after childhood? Like, who am I in the grown-up world, or where I have to be self independent, where there's these, like, as a child or as a teenager you have, you know, everything is still kind of so far away, but then when reality hits you have to make these decisions on you know, and suddenly in that scene, you know, suddenly it's expected of her to, like, the next step in her life is to get married.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want that, and it's not because she wants to stay young or whatever. It's just that the steps of being a proper adult or a proper woman don't really apply to her, like, or she doesn't see herself as that being her future.
Yeah,
she doesn't want that, and that's, I think, what you mean with her clinging to her childhood.
Yeah,
but for me it's just like the resilience of conforming to society, but I think she also really struggles with that, and that is kind of, I don't know, did we mention that, but she's kind of, she isn't really in tune with her emotions, like,
yeah,
she doesn't really understand her emotions.
Yeah,
and that's I think, I mean, it's been half a year, so I don't know what she's saying exactly in that scene, but she keeps being frustrated about the fact that she doesn't want to get married, but she can't really explain why, and she just finds all these reasons that don't really make sense to Laurie, for example, and I don't know if they even make sense to her, really.
I think she said, no, I think for Laurie, she says that we would be miserable, like that their characters would not match.
But she also says, like, I don't think I will ever marry, and she, like, talks about it like she's not made for marriage, not just to him, but in general, she's not made for marriage, when in reality, I don't think it's because she's not made for it, but because she doesn't want it. It's not the life she wants. She wants freedom. But I don't think that's something that really comes to her mind. Like, that's an option, really. I think she's just trying. She's resilient, but doesn't really know why.
Maybe so.
And that's like, why. I mean, that's why. She's like defying. Later on, there's the dialogue between her and Marmee where she's like, maybe I should have, you know,
married him.
Married him. Maybe I should have said yes. And her mother is like, yeah, you shouldn't just marry because you're lonely. And
the dialogue is about it. But I didn't want to cut you off.
No, I was like, oh my god, I'm starting to ramble. I don't know where I'm going with this. I just keep talking.
No, I think it makes sense, but I think why I felt like that Joe was holding on to this time of childhood is not only because of that, but also of other, like, there was this other scene where Meg is getting married and she says, like, we can, like, run away, you don't have to do this. And I know that's also part of, like, the conflict, like, it shows their different aspirations. But I think for me also, it feels like Meg is ready to move forward in her life. And, like, I feel like, and you said something very interesting, because you said it's probably because Joe's, first of all, alone. Like, mostly in the world, and secondly, like, she's feeling her family not being as close, or she has this feeling that, you know, her family's not as close as they used to. And I mean, for me, that's why I'm saying, like, I feel like she holds on to childhood because the dynamics were very different, and she's scared of losing that, basically.
Which I think makes a lot of sense, because in that time, especially if you're a woman and you get married, you are basically married off into a new family, and your family isn't as important anymore, because you're just.
And I think Joe knows that. That's why she talks to Meg about it.
That's why she's scared of losing her family, basically, because she knows if Meg gets married off I'm literally
like marriage. We both pulled guns, like the actual.
If, you know, Meg gets married, like, the next step is either her getting married or Amy getting married, and everyone will just fade away.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, we've been talking for 50 minutes, so we should... Yeah! Crazy, right? So we will pick it up
maybe
a bit.
Maybe we should edit it a bit.
So, quickly, what I wanted to say, like... about the technical aspects, there was just like three things. One was I like how the characters are basically color coded. Yes. You know, like, you can Joe mostly wears red. I think Amy mostly wears blue, and I think Meg mostly like violet.
Yeah.
And Beth green, but Beth and Meg exchange colors. I've noticed that. They sometimes switch.
Yeah, I mean, it's also because they're supposed to be poor, so they have to share clothes, or Meg's clothes get.
But there is this one, you know, when Meg buys a garment to make a dress? It's green. It's not lilac, so, but anyway, I really like that. And then I think someone else said this. I remember watching a video essay, but someone was like, and Marmee has all of their colors. And I was like, the second time I watched it, I was like,
Marmee?
Oh!
All of them?
Yeah, I was like, holy shit, this is so cool. And I don't know if that was intentional, but I love it. And I love that the past and the present is separated by the filter, you know, because the past always has this golden filter over it, basically, and the present is much harsher and colder colors, and except the last scene where they celebrate Marmee's birthday, and then it becomes back, like, then it goes back to that, like, golden-y look, and I think that's also because it makes sense because, you know, they're the family is reunited, yeah, and there is warmth again in the house, and, you know, love and all of
the conflict is gone.
They're connected again.
Yeah.
And I just really like the settings. Like, we said this about the houses already. Like, they really make distinctions between each environment and how it's supposed to make you feel, you know? Is that a correct grammar? Anyway. But sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's it, actually. And I think that's really... I mean, it's, like, details, but it adds so much depth to the movie, in my opinion. Yeah, that is it, I think.
For technicality or in general? Because I still have things to say.
No, we have things to say still about the themes in this movie.
It sounded so final. I was like, oh god, I still have some things to say.
We have so many things to say still. I wrote down so many quotes. I don't know about you, but
I did not write down quotes. I have like five words. I wrote down like first I was like themes of womanhood because I feel like that's the main focus of the movie, and also I think it was Anna Biller on Twitter, the filmmaker, who said that she was so surprised by the fact that a movie or that is set in like the 19th century resonates so much with women today.
Yeah.
from the themes. And I remember just thinking about that and being like, wow, like nothing has changed for women.
Yeah.
Literally, like we have the illusion that there's you know, change. Things have there's change and there's we're closer to equality, but really we're not. And then I wrote down womanhood as an obstacle ?
I have a quote for that.
Oh, give me the quote.
Because she said Yeah, I think Joe. I think it was Joe. She said, "I can't get over my disappointment of being a girl."
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, "Holy shit! Like, this is
Because she also says that while she's like in the younger years, I think
this is like in the very beginning, somewhere in the beginning of one of the first, I think, retrospective shots where she says that, and I was like,
"Yeah,
she knows
she,
me.
She already knows as a young like girl." There's things that she can't do because she's a woman.
Yeah, so that, love that. You were saying?
Yeah, that's like literally you just you underlined my point.
Yeah.
I wrote that down in relation to Joe and Amy and their pursuit of art. Because you have Meg and Beth who are also...
Artistic
in their own right.
Yeah.
But they do not thrive to have recognition from the public.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main difference.
Their art is for the home, for the private.
Yeah.
Not just for themselves, but for their family.
Yeah.
Which is very, you know, at the time, but I feel like even now, very normal for women that they are artistic, but they keep it to themselves or in private, or their family and friends. Whereas Joe and Amy both want to be recognized by the public, and they go into public spaces. Joe tries to get published, tries to keep her copyright at the end.
Yeah.
They want to be recognized, but they also they leave the space, like the home space, which is very interesting for the time period, I think, because a lot of impressionist art from the time, you know, at least in like paintings, it's the time when painters could actually, you know, there was more mobility. You had pre-made paint and stuff, so you could actually go into the wild, quote-unquote, or into public spaces and make impressionist art. That's kind of how impressionism started, is that you could, you know, just
make an impression.
Make it just sit down and work for like 10 minutes or something. And the difference between a lot of female artists from the time and male artists is that if you look at their paintings, the spaces that they paint are different, because the the women paint private scenes, or if they show the outside world,
it's still with
you usually see a barrier, like they're on a balcony, or they are usually, there's something separating them from the public, because the public spaces are male spaces. And if you see women painted by men, they're usually prostitutes.
Or like together with men. Like, I think there is this very famous picnic picture, for example.
Yeah, with with.
I think it
with...
was by Pierre Bonnard, but I'm not sure. I think maybe he came later. I think he came
is
later.
Is it like?
I don't know.
Manet. Edouard Manet.
Is that by him? I'm not sure.
I'm,
but he also has a like picnic pictures. So
But I mean, women who are, you know, who can. Move in public spaces. They're usually either, you know, working in bars or prostitutes. Those are the women that move in public spaces. Yeah, I don't know. That's what I was thinking about, because it reminded me of this one art historian who said that there's the spaces of womanhood and there are the private spaces. That's why I was like, womanhood is an obstacle, because it's difficult to get into the, you know, the public spaces. But that's what Amy and Joe
are trying to overcome. And I think one of my favorite monologues, like, this movie doesn't have many and they're not very long, but one of my favorite monologues is, of course, when Amy goes off at Lori about how marriage is an economic proposition for women. And before she says that, though, she says, I want to be great or I want to be nothing. And I think we said this before, but Amy and Joe share that sentiment. But she also, what I find so amazing in that scene is that she says, like, how many women are, you know,
geniuses. A lot in the club of geniuses.
Yeah. And then Lori says, like, the Bronte sisters. And she was like, yeah, see, like, she knows that, like, that's kind of when she realizes that she will probably never be recognized as an artist. And that's when she kind of gives up the, and she gives into, like, because her dream is to feel, to be an artist. But, for example, her family's expectation, especially that of Aunt March, is to marry rich. And that's kind of when she hangs up the... her painter's coat, and she, you know, even though she rejects the first guy, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, you also, in that scene, you have Laurie, what does he say? He's like, who's in love, the Club of Genius, and she says the Bronte sisters. He asks, and she says...
No, she asks who's allowed in the Club of Geniuses.
No.
I will look this up.
He says, who's in, allowed in the Club of Geniuses anyway? And she says, like, what women? And she's like, the Bronte sisters? And he's like, yeah, but who decides on... And then she's like, men. And he's like,
no,
see?
Okay, Maura was right. I was wrong. He started the conversation. But, I mean, she's very... She knows. I feel like that's, like... She knows what he's pointing at, you know?
That's not what I wanted to say. I mean, like, he points out that the public spaces are the, you know, who dictates history or genius. It's dictated by men. And so... I forgot what we were talking about in the but I don't know. I thought that was also very important that it is pointed out that men are they just have advantages, because they not only
sex-based advantages.
They not only are they allowed in public spaces or dictate the public spaces. They also dictate
They make all
the general opinion on art. And I think it's also showcased in the scene where she is practicing or has an art class, and she paints, and then she looks over at the person next to her who is painting, and he's making a very abstract art, and then she looks at hers and she's more being realistic. And then she, you can see in her face that she's
disappointed
because she is not a genius. But
And she also, I think one of the, so this monologue for me is important for two things. One is the part of, like, I want to be great or I want to be nothing, and the whole, like, where she says, I don't want to be an ornament to society. You know, I want to be taken seriously as an artist, and that women have a hard time being artists. And of course, the part where she says marriage is an economic proposition, which shows that women also don't have any social standing. Like, she says, like, if I were, you know, to marry, the kids, my children would be my husband's children. Our property would be my husband's property. And that is, I think, still very much the case now. Like, of course, also the artistic side. Also, like, how many women artists do we know, or that make it very big? Or, like, even when we had art class, like, we had we took it as a class in high school, and we only learned about men. Like, we talked about Picasso. We talked about, like, even in architecture.
I think most artists that people know. If you ask someone, like, name a female artist, I think most people would have to think about it a lot, and then maybe say Frida Kahlo.
Yeah,
and
I was about to say.
That's it. And I remember, since I'm studying art history, I remember last semester we kind of had a rundown of all the art history, basically, and I had, like, it was kind of disheartening because some of the professors would literally just name male artists, and I was like, are they no female artists in the Renaissance? Are they no female artists before modern art, basically?
When Gentileschi is right there!
Literally! And I have one professor, like, he wasn't modern art, but it was almost modern art, like, on the brink, let me say that, like, to modern art. Anyway, and he was like, do not let anyone tell you that there were no women in art beforehand. Yeah. And I remember the week before, a professor was like, in this time, art was from men for men.
Yeah.
Or maybe from women for men, but it was never, like, from women for women, or from men for women.
Yeah,
it's always for men.
Yeah,
and that's I was like, but he was also like, there's maybe sometimes once in a while woman making art for men.
Yeah,
I was like, once in a while.
Are we sure about that? But yeah, that part is still very relevant, but so is the economic proposition part for me, because not only, I mean, it might not be as prevalent as it was back then, like, it's not as clearly cut out mostly, but you still, as soon as you're married, you are still your husband's property, and that is, first of all, shown to me through, you know, why are we taking the man's name still? Like, you know, it's still commonplace.
Even though you have the other option, it's, it's never,
it's, like, expected
nobody
of you.
Even, like, it may be both names, but never the woman's name.
Which is, like, I mean, I don't want to get married to a man, but I always had that standpoint that I will keep my name. Like, my husband doesn't have to take my name, but I will keep my name because it means a lot to me. Which
also,
seems silly, but
if you get divorced, which is, I mean, if you get married, you don't want to get divorced, but
imagine you get married to get divorced.
If you get married, you take your husband's name and then you divorce.
Yeah.
You still have his name.
Really?
Yeah.
Don't you change?
I mean, you can change it back, but
yeah, but
it's so fucked up.
It is,
because
really...
my grandma still has
really
her ex-husband's name.
That's weird. I didn't know that. I just, like, for me, I mean, also coming from a perspective of, you know, countries where it is still more prevalent, like, I talked about this before, but the fact that, for example, once you're married, you cannot, like, get an abortion unless your husband agrees to do so.
In Turkey?
In Turkey, yeah. So, I'm like, that is fucked up, because why does he get to decide? And like, you know, some people are gonna be like, yeah, if you're married, you're a couple, and like, you're supposed to make these decisions together, but it's not fair. It's
the woman's body.
You still have to birth
the child. You're not an incubator.
Yeah, and also there's still something called marital rape, which is obviously not recognized by the state. Mm. So I'm like, this is still relevant in the sense also that, like, the I think the most simplest example is the wage gap. Yeah. Like, you know, the gender wage gap. I'm like, literally, this is still true. Like, as a woman, you will never earn as much as a man. Mm. Like, it's almost impossible, because you're not valued in society enough to be paid the same wage. And there was something that I interviewed this woman once in Brussels. She's like one of the oldest lesbian activists in Brussels. And she said, you can be a gay man and still be rich and successful, but you will never be a lesbian who is rich and successful, because there's just no space. Like, they're not valued, and there's no space for them to do that. And I think that's still that's why I felt that part was so relevant, because I'm like, holy shit, it's still the same. Like, literally it's still the same. And but to the other part, for the, you know, like Joe says in the very beginning, like, I can't get over my disappointment of being a girl. And then you have that you know, the talk with Laurie and Amy, where they're like, yeah, women are not recognized anyway. And then at the very end, when Joe has her monologue, when she says, like, women,
they have minds
as well as just hearts, and I'm so sick and tired of, so what did she say? So sick and tired of them being reduced to heart, something like that. Anyway, that monologue. I'm like, this is still the same. Like, women are mostly, like, not only in real life, but also in movies and books. This is why, you know, we always are talking about representation, and why we want more representation, is the fact that women are always seen in relation to men. Mm-hmm. Like, they are always put, they're only relevant in relation to men. And, you know, like, that monologue, again, has also these two sides. Like, the fact that artists, or, like, in any type of, what's it called? Pursuit, women are not recognized, and when they're recognized, they're only recognized because of men. Yeah. And
men dictate who is recognized.
Yes,
that's
so I'm just,
that's why it's so difficult to, you know, people, like, nowadays, that's what I keep thinking in my studies, that we know that female artists existed,
yeah,
and that they exist, but
we don't talk about them.
We don't talk about them because
they're not relevant.
The male artists have been established, and they don't want to de-establish those artists because they think that they are the height of art. And even though for artists, like the most known artists, a lot of the times they had influences from vast, like, so many different places, and, like, especially, like, European artists, they have, it's so known that, you know, Van Gogh had a lot of influence from Japan, but we don't look at those Japanese artists, and that Picasso was influenced by African art as well as South American art, and that they're, like, there's female artists from that time that
influenced
his style, but we don't say, oh, you know, they started the movement. It's him who started the movement.
Yeah.
And we don't want to rewrite history to erase, I mean, not erase men, but, you know, humble them a bit. They should be humbled a bit, because they are treated as those geniuses, but where does the genius come from?
Yeah. This is one of the reasons, again, one of the reasons I think this movie is so fantastic, is because the men in the, because in real life, it's mostly dictated by men and all of that. But in the movie, as you said, Laurie is the quota, right?
He's like the token guy.
And it's so fun. I love that the most men, I mean, there is multiple men in the movie, but they're not, and there are.
There's four.
Like, is there four? I thought there was only three.
There's the Laurie, teacher, there's Laurie? Frederick, or whatever his name is.
Oh, yeah, fuck, I forgot about Frederick.
There's the Meg's husband, and then there's
the grandfather.
The grandfather.
The teacher. And the teacher.
Meg's husband is the teacher.
Oh, yeah, true.
What's the name of the guy that Amy doesn't marry?
Tom? I don't know.
Harold?
Thomas? I thought it was Thomas. I don't know.
Fred!
Fred!
Fred, yeah, the five men.
Tom is the same name to me. No, but what I like is that, you know, they are kind of important for the plot, but... They never take the main stage, and
they're only important related to the women.
Exactly, and I love that about the movie so much.
Even though, you know, Laurie's grandfather is shown as kind of a father figure to the girls.
Yeah,
I mean, it's he has fatherly affection for Beth because she reminds him of his daughter or something like that. He's still not as important as Marmee.
Yeah,
you know, Marmee is a full-fleshed character, whereas he has like two scenes that show that he cares.
Yeah, exactly.
Women.
Indeed. There was something else.
I actually googled the quote.
So oh yeah,
I
want to
do a dramatic reading.
Do it.
It's women. They have minds and they have souls, as well as just hearts, and they've got ambition and they've got talent, as well as just beauty. And I'm so sick of people saying that love is just all a woman is fit for. Yes. But I'm so lonely. I mean, she says, is fit for, I'm so sick of it. But yeah. I cannot read that dramatically. So
you did it well.
This is a, yeah.
You did it well.
Verbatim.
Like, I mean, it's expected of women... to be the nurturing person in a partnership, right? Like, it's always this, like, oh yeah, she's gonna get married and have children, and like, you know, she's gonna be the nurturing part of it, while the man is gonna be like the
financial and
the breadwinner, whatever. And I
it's that, again the public and the private.
Yeah, and that's again like this whole heteronormative patriarchal society idea, that we're upholding since the beginning of time basically. It's I'm so glad that they like talked about it, and I also I found that scene so heartbreaking, not only because of that, but also because she says I'm so lonely, because I completely understand to, like, you know, knowing what you want but longing for something else as well. And, you know, and like, that doesn't make her, I don't think that makes her a hypocrite. I don't think that makes her, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I think that makes her human. And I love that scene for that as well, because I'm like, you have this, you have Joe who's like, you know, like this fighter, and she like rejects all of these things. And like, I get it. And like, I'm glad that she does, but I also understand that she wants love in her life and that kind of love as well, you know? Yeah. And not saying that it has to be by a man,
but the conflict, you know, is that in the world we live in, or at least, you know, I'm gonna say in her time period, but
I mean, it's also
it's still same. Relevant today.
Yeah.
But what she's expressing there is that, you know, she wants to reject all these principles.
Yeah.
But she's so lonely because the only way for her to get you know, have companionship, have family, have these concepts, is if she conforms to society.
Yeah.
Because the way that the society is built is that it takes the community apart. You know, as soon as you're a grown woman, you leave your community and are shipped off to a new one to serve a different purpose.
But she doesn't want that.
And she doesn't want that, but...
Yeah.
There, what other way is there for her to have her like a family or have companionship, have these things?
Yeah.
And what I like that in the end of the movie they showed that it's possible.
Yeah.
And that's also why I think it's a very modern way of telling the story. I mean, I'm not sure how the book ends.
I didn't read the book.
I read the, because there is a sequel to the book, or two sequels.
Maybe.
It's like Good Wives is the second one, and then the third one is like Joe and Her Boys or something. But the boys are like the school children, something like that. God, I forgot my word. Oh yeah, the end of the movie, I think it shows that it's possible to find a way around that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we talked about this, that for me, the end is very ambiguous because I don't see Joe getting married or having, like, explicitly having a relationship to Frederick, with Frederick. Is that even, is it Friedrich? I'm not sure. It's one of those.
Yeah. He's French.
Oh God, in the book he's German, that's why I'm like,
they were like, we can't put a German guy in there, that's not sexy enough.
Yeah, but because to me it was ambiguous because of the scene where, you know, she sends her manuscript and then she talks to her publisher and he says, you know, we will print this if at the end she's married. And then she's like, all right. And then you see the scene of her chasing him. And it's filmed in such a dramatic way. It's very reminiscent of, you know, like 50s romance movies, in my opinion.
Isn't it? But that's why I'm confused, because you see the chasing part before she agrees to that.
I mean, no, they say that she's like, you like him, and...
No, so they, like...
Oh my God, dude, they're like, am I wrong?
No, I'm sure that... So they start chasing him, and then it's stopped, like, they kiss, and then it stops, and it cuts to the scene where the publisher reads it, and he's like, oh, this is very nice, but she still needs to get married, and she's like, all right. And that's why I...
No.
Yeah.
No, I am so sure that she's like, all right, and then you have the scene where they're chasing him, and that's why it's so overly dramatic, because she just agreed to it. Because, okay, it's like this. Okay. I can...
recreate
it. So, he leaves.
Yeah.
He leaves, and she's like, yeah, but he's gone now, and stuff like that, and
they get the
both scenes are shown, like... interchangeably, like the sequence of the car chase. Oh my God, I'm losing my mind here. So you have the scene of him saying goodbye to her, and mm-hmm. she's like, bye.
Yeah.
And also the scene of her being with her publisher.
I'm pretty sure those are separated. I'm so sure those are separated. Like, wait, okay, let me look this up again.
Okay.
I apparently have no memory.
Okay, like, I don't remember shit. Frederick or Friedrich, whatever his name is, he says Friedrich. Goodbye. And her sisters are like, you like him. And then they follow him. And mm-hmm. then it cuts to the publisher who asks her to meet her when she... and he's like, who does she marry? And she's like, no one. And he's like, no, she has to marry someone. And then she's like, all right. And then you see the scene of her...
Yeah.
Getting to him and being like, I don't want you to leave, and it's very dramatized.
Yeah.
And to me, that gives you the ambiguity
mm-hmm.
of, does she actually end up with him, or yeah. is it just the way the book is written?
Yeah.
And of course, he's still there at the end, at yeah. the
birthday party,
but that could just be him having joined their
school.
Of quote unquote joined the family, because Laurie was part of the family before he married Amy.
Yeah.
And maybe they just accepted him into the family without him really being romantically involved. But I mean, he could also be romantically involved with Joe without them being married.
Yeah.
But she says, like, with like her full confidence, like, she doesn't, like, the girl doesn't get married in the book, because yeah. she says from the beginning she doesn't
want to get married.
So to me, that shows that she's still like, I don't want to get married.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that she doesn't end up with a man, but yeah. it means that she doesn't get married.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think I love when he's like, they don't want to see women consistent. Okay. But yeah, no, that's true. I do, for me, the ending was still like, okay, they're together. I don't yeah. know if they're married, but yeah. like, you know.
To me, it was very open. Like, it's open to interpretation. And my interpretation is that Joe is a lesbian. and I think the movie allows my interpretation to exist.
Yeah.
I just have to get that in there. Like, yeah. My interpretation is valid. I'm not saying it's the intended one, but I'm saying that it is a possible one.
Yeah. I think it's so funny because I think it's her that says at some point, like, if I was a girl in a book, this would be so easy.
Hmm.
And I think that's so funny considering what her publisher says to her at the end. I'm just like, lol. Imagine. Yeah, but there was one more. I think that's it with the themes. There's one more thing that I wanted to... that stood out to me, which was when... this is a bit before the ending, of course. Before Beth dies. Beth and Joe are at the beach. And Joe says to Beth, like, don't go quietly.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.
Literally, that was me. But I think that's so... I think that was... so beautiful because I mean of course it's because Beth is the quiet one, you know, of course she, you know, that's one part of it, but for me it also, you know, women are always supposed to like hide their suffering and just, you know, be pretty and be out there and be like, you know, their pain is not taken seriously in many ways, like emotional and physical. And I think that was like so, I don't know, I was like, I love women.
I found that very interesting because the one thing I relate to with Beth is that she's the quiet one, that she's she's kind of the ghost of the family, even though like she's there and she's loved, but she doesn't really,
she's very passive.
She exists and she's amenable, but
she lets things happen to her more like than she takes, she doesn't really control her own narrative, in my opinion. Like things are given to her or like handed to her and she deals with them in that way, but she is not the driver in her own story, while for example Joe is very much like,
and that's also why that's in that scene, even like showcase, because Joe wants her to fight back
and I think I really like that. I think that's amazing. I also love, I have to say this because you, since you mentioned Joe being a lesbian, like for me, Beth is the lesbian because she said, like, I'm afraid of boys or something like that. And I was like, yeah, girl, I get that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, that's so funny.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Choose your fighter. Who's the lesbian in the story? Maybe it was Meg all along. You know?
Imagine. That would be amazing. Mm. Okay. I think this is it for my side.
Frederick is just a beard.
Frederick is just there. Also, the father is not that... I mean, in my opinion, he's not that important, but... I mean, he is,
all right, but... he's also in the movie. I was like, he's just... he's, you know, in the war. He doesn't come back, but he does come back. I forgot.
I think, I guess the last thing that I didn't mention before was that, like, when, you know, when Marmee goes to volunteer and there is this one lady, she's like, and Marmee's like, oh yeah, I'm proud for the first time or something to be, like, of our country. And then the woman next to her is like, yeah, there is still a lot to, you know.
Oh, she says she doesn't want to be ashamed of her country or something.
Yeah.
And
then the woman next to her is, there's still a lot. Yeah. And she's like, yeah, I know. Yeah. And I was like, Marmee the woke queen. Love her for that.
Progressive liberal.
Yeah.
I mean, she has socialistic vibes, so...
Yeah.
We applaud her for that.
She definitely does.
She gives away, like, her scarf for free.
But it's okay. We didn't talk about how Aunt Marge kind of defies societal norms because she has money. Like, she was...
Aunt Marge, yeah.
Yeah, she preserved her...
Aunt Marge is the lesbian all along.
I mean,
she's like, she didn't marry because she didn't have to.
Yeah,
she didn't.
But deep down, we know. Oh,
that's why she, you know, she looks out for Joe in the beginning, because she makes Joe read for her.
Yeah. I remember.
She's like, and that's why she gives her the house, because she's like, she's not gonna get married or like, she's not gonna have that. So she's like, you know,
like, lesbian wink. 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 True. I forgot about that. But yeah, I think this and many, like, all of these reasons is why I love Little Women. And I think it's it should be the benchmark. I haven't watched the other movies, but I think if there is ever going to be another adaptation of it, I feel like this is... Yeah. I think this movie is going to age well and it's going to become a classic.
I think if you want to remake Little Women one more time, you would have to have a solid reason.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of the times that's what I say about adapting or remaking stories, movies,
yeah,
is that if you want to make a remake, you have to have a solid reason to make it, like why the original is not good enough anymore, or why you have to have a new perspective.
Yeah.
And I think what Greta did is she made it modern, she made it accessible, like an accessible story to people who aren't really into period dramas.
Mm.
And I think she found a focus.
Yeah.
I'm saying that as someone who hasn't seen any of the other ones, completely, but, I think she has a solid point, like reason to make this remake.
She makes it relevant for us.
Yeah.
For women in the 21st century. And she is explaining so many issues in such a short time and in a very
intricate way.
And I don't think that men watching the movie will get it as much, to be honest, which is fine.
Men just don't get women. Like, I remember of my friends, I'm not going to say his name, but I remember he watched Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, yeah, that abortion scene was so unnecessary.
Every sex scene,
this movie was so good, but that scene was kind of like random and unnecessary. Yeah. And I was like, it's because you're not a woman that you don't get it. And also, it's in there to make you as a man uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the reasons it's in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the same thing with Little Women. Like, I think men can appreciate it. But they will not get it to the full extent because they just never learned how to empathize with women.
Yeah.
Not to be a radical feminist in this house.
Aren't we always?
Mm.
Anyway. All right. We hope that you also like Little Women. And if you don't, you're wrong. No.
It's okay, but you should get some perspective.
Yeah. No. Country boy. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for having this discussion with me. I think it was very interesting.
I sure hope it is, because we talked for 1.5 hours.
For almost as long as the movie is. So, yeehaw. But I don't know if for some reason you haven't watched the movie, but you listened to this episode.
Maybe. Congrats. I hope you made it to the end.
Yeah, and I hope you go watch the movie now. And this is definitely one of those movies that I want to show my sister to be like, to push my feminist agenda on her.
I remember when I was done with the movie, the one scene that fucked me up is when Joe says, you know, life's too short to be angry at your sister.
Oh,
at the time I was having trouble with my sister. I was like... and then like a few weeks later she called me and I was like, thinking about that scene.
Love that movie. Anyway, thank you
always.
Thank you also for listening. Stay hydrated because it's super hot at the moment.
I'm sweating buckets of water.
And stay safe and see you.
Wear your mask.
Yes, please. Holy moly. Anyway, see you next week. Bye.